Hi, everyone. This is your host, Susanna. If you're new here, welcome. I am so excited that you decided to check out the 5 to 8 Shift podcast. And if you have been around for two seasons and then some, I am so grateful. I am so thankful. Thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing with your friends in real life and on your socials. And I'm excited to bring you guys our throwback summer series. So it's August in Pennsylvania. It is hot and humid and wonderful. And my birthday month. So, you know, no complaining on this front. And so last summer I did a throwback series and we really got some great feedback. And so I wanted to do it again. And so I'm sharing with you guys four amazing episodes from season two that we really got a lot of feedback on, that people really enjoyed and found a lot of value in and insight in and listened to and shared with other people. And so we picked four of great guests who we were so thrilled to have on the podcast that we're going to re-air this August. And then, very exciting, in September, we're going to come out with season three. And so we are going to be doing some series for season three. So we're going to pick a topic and we're going to do a little bit deeper dive into that topic and kind of get a couple guests giving us different angles and different perspectives around the different topics. And so you guys are going to have to check in September to hear what they are. But I really hope you do. I hope you follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. As always, if you want to help, we would love a review. We would love for you to share on your socials. And I really hope you enjoy this throwback series. And I hope you are having a great summer. Thanks for being here. You guys have a great day. This is Susanna McMonagle, and you're listening to season two of the 5 to 8 Shift podcast for parents. The 5 to 8 Shift podcasting community exists to educate, inspire, and encourage parents throughout their own parenthood and family life adventure. Here, we talk about all the things impacting parents today, everything from health to big emotions, toddlers to teenagers, faith, self-care, stress, and so much more. We know parenting is tough work, but family life is worth every ounce of effort. We're building a community of parents to remind you that you're not alone. Family is one of life's greatest adventures. I look forward to cheering you on in your own 5 to 8 shift. It's the most important shift of the day. Hey everybody, this is Susanna. Welcome to another episode of the 5 to 8 shift. I am so excited that you guys are here today. This is episode 40 on season 2, which I can't believe. I'm really proud of this little podcast and all the amazing guests we've had on and the wonderful topics. And I love getting feedback from you guys about the episodes that are resonating with you. And so one of the things that I know that you guys have sort of given me some feedback on is you love hearing from experts. You love hearing from people who have been in the trenches with families, who have dedicated their careers to doing different kinds of work to help families thrive. And so today, I'm excited to say that I have another type of episode like that. So today's episode is with Kristen Papa. Kristen is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She has been meeting with clients for over 15 years. She's a professor now, and she teaches in a PhD program. She got her own PhD in family and marriage counseling, and she is wonderful. And today's topic is self-care for families. And I really loved when Kristen came back to me with this topic because I think it's so timely, especially at the end of the year, when we are often have long to-do lists and a lot to get done and, of course, never enough time to do it. And so she talks about self-care for families, how we as the parents can prioritize it, ways to be more intentional. And one of the things I really love that Kristen shared on this episode is how we can sort of categorize our season in life and how that correlates to the self-care that we need. And she just has this little system. I don't want to give it away. You're going to have to listen in of thinking about the different levels that we're on. And so it can be so helpful. I mean, you could ask your kids and it could help you respond to your kids in a way that makes sense instead of guessing. It could help you respond to a friend and it can help you assess yourself, right? So sometimes, for example, people say self-care is one thing, but if you're in a specific tier level, self-care could look really different. And that's good. And so the more we can better understand where we are sort of in these different tiers, the better we can get back on track. And so Kristen is, you know, she's smart, she's passionate, she has such a love for families, and she has such a helpful personality, and you guys are going to love what she has to share today. So I am going to leave you with that. That's going to be it for today. Thank you for being here. And if I could ask you one favor, I'm going to ask you to share this episode. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, there's a little button that says copy a link or share via text message or an email, or post to your stories on socials. But I just think there's so many families who could benefit from this message, to walk away with having some tips and some tools. And so if you guys can share that with one person, that would be awesome. Thanks for being here. I'll drop you into my interview conversation with Kristen Papa. Okay, Kristen Papa, welcome to the 5 to 8 Shift podcast. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't you start off by telling my listeners a little bit about your background and who you are?
Sure. So my background primarily has been in two fields. One has been marriage and family therapy, which isn't just seeing couples and families, but is also seeing individuals. That's a question I get asked a lot.
Yeah.
And in ministry, because I come from a pastoral family and have been active in the church all my life. And so those two things have worked really well together, and as a result have brought me to where I am currently at Eastern, where our students come from clinical backgrounds and from ministry backgrounds, and they're studying how to integrate their faith in their practice.
Okay. So tell my audience, what kinds of things are you doing at Eastern? Like what, you know, what are you teaching other people how to do?
Yeah. So I'm an associate professor in the marriage and family therapy department, and also one of the directors. We have two doctoral programs. One is a doctor of arts and the other is a doctor of philosophy. And a question we get all the time is, what's the difference between the two of them? And essentially,
there you go. Thank you for being one step ahead.
The doctor of arts has much more of a clinical practitioner focus to it. And so people who are wanting to work with clients primarily, or are doing a lot of education in their context, whether that's ministry or nonprofit settings. And the PhD has more of that research and higher education focus. And so that means that they may end up as faculty somewhere, or they're interested in continuing to study something specifically. I also help them to practice ethically because I teach the ethics class, and I do my best to make it fun and engaging. Yeah. And then I work closely with students as they are putting their dissertations together. I teach all the dissertation courses.
So you're a very busy woman. That's what you're telling us.
I am. Well, in addition to that, I also work part-time in clinical practice and see clients and supervise people who are interested in becoming therapists.
And so the clinical side, how long have you been doing that kind of work?
The clinical side's probably 18 years.
Okay.
And I have my own practice, which I started 13 years ago.
Okay. So yeah. Okay. So you have no free time. You are helping people clinically and also teaching other people how to do the same. That's awesome, Kristen. I feel like, what a gift. Oh my goodness. You're using your talents on both ends of the spectrum. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, and I've actually spent the last couple of years working to get free time back into my life, because it had become a lot. It had really accumulated, and that wasn't a good balance. And it was not what I was telling my students and my clients to do.
Yeah.
And so I've really been intentional the last couple of years about starting to carve that time and regain it. And I think I'm better for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's like a great, that's actually the perfect segue into what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about self-care for families today. And I think this is a great topic, honestly, because I think of what you just said, because I think So the pandemic, I think, has done a couple things. Like, it's allowed us to sort of think about, so the world stopped and then it started up again. So we started thinking about like all these things that we want to put back into our lives. But the truth is, like, I'll speak for myself. There's not many things on my list that I don't want to do. They're all, you know, friends and work, and I love teaching, and the kids are just a lot of work. And I'm like, but like, I just can't do it all well. And then what happens is kind of what you're saying. I have no time left for myself. I have no time to like even have thoughts in my head. I'm like, you know, I said to my three-year-old, I'm like, stop talking. Mommy needs to think. Just give me 1 minute and then I'll answer your question. And so it's interesting that you've dealt with that, even though you're telling people that this is really important. And so I'm so glad you're coming on to talk about this today. So why don't you start off? Why don't you tell us a little bit about, like, why is self-care so important, and why does it always seem to fall like last on the list?
Yeah. It's funny because these kinds of things, right, they come from our personal experience. And so when I was in graduate school, I did two things. I did graduate school and work to pay for graduate school. And I essentially dropped out of all social activities and interactions. And I got my work done and I finished grad school, but I emerged from that disconnected from so many things. And I really felt the effects of it. And when I decided to pursue a doctoral degree, I knew I wanted to do it differently. And so that was the beginning of this journey that led me to want to then study self-care and why it is so important, but also, like you said, how it ends up being last on the list. I think one of the reasons that it winds up last on the list is because that self part of it has a lot of people feeling selfish when they do it. That self-care sounds selfish, and I'm here to be a wife, be a mother, be a friend, be a coworker, all of those different kinds of things. And all of those are really important and have to get done. But I remember sitting with a client who was slowly getting sick. She was developing a cold, and I could see that happening over the course of a couple of weeks. And I encouraged her to go to the doctor, and she said, I don't have any time. And she told me what her schedule was like. And there was a lot of ferrying kids different places and getting meals ready and those kinds of things. And so I asked her, if you don't go to the doctor, what do you think is going to happen? And she said, I'm probably going to be sick and in bed for a few days. I said, and who's going to ferry those kids to all these appointments you're saying they have to go to? And she said, I don't know. So I said, yes, you're taking care of yourself, but by extension, you're also going to be able to keep doing what you want to do, which is taking care of these other people. But that kind of thought just goes right outside of our head. We just think, I'm not going to be able to do this. So I don't have time to make this appointment to take care of myself, because that means I have to drop one thing of the kids rather than 3 days worth of things.
Yeah, that's actually a great example, because so, and I think self-care, so sometimes I think self-care is like you're booking a 3-day spa vacation in Arizona. Yeah. And that's not what it is for most people. I mean, for some people,
it can be.
You know, hey, you got a big birthday, by all means, take yourself to Arizona. But like, what are some other examples of this self-care that get neglected? So you mentioned health. Is there anything else that comes up in some of your work that you've seen over the years?
Yeah, there's 5 areas I'm always checking in with people. So physical is one. Then mental, emotional, spiritual, and relational. And sometimes they're separate categories, but a lot of times they're interrelated and there's more than one that's touching on it. And so I think back to how I knew when I was in school that I could not wait for 1 week of vacation and then 51 weeks till the next week of vacation, because it just was not going to be sustainable. It's kind of like you said, right? We don't all have time to just do some grand gesture and that's our self-care. So I started working at how could I implement it on a much smaller basis and a much sooner basis. One of the ways that I did that was I started carving out one day a week. That was my day to rest and my day to not do any work. And that made such a difference because I only had to wait 6 days till the next time I was going to get a little bit of relief. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of time, and I'm not saying I did nothing on that day, but I didn't do work. I did things that were going to be more energizing or more life-giving for me. But what I tell a lot of people to do is, what's a small hole you can start to carve out in your schedule? If you're running 7 days a week, can you just start by finding 1 hour in there that's set aside and then slowly begin to build on that as a way of making time for yourself? Physically, the things that go out the window the quickest are, they're going to sound very basic, but they are the ones that go first, and it's food and sleep.
I believe it 100%. And like, I believe it. I know you're right, but I can't always even see when it's happening until like in hindsight. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man.
Yeah. But those are two things that I say, if you're going to give some attention somewhere, you have to see that you even have those basics in place, right? It's like, are you eating? Are you sleeping? What does that look like for you on a day-to-day basis? Mentally, can your brain even think? And I find this to be true. If I'm reading something and I read the same sentence 5 times, my brain is trying to tell me something.
Yes.
It needs a break. Emotionally, on a very small scale, finding things that make you laugh, finding things that are going to be life-giving for you rather than life-draining. And those things change. And so you don't need to feel like you're pigeonholed into one thing. An example for me is I love to read, but when I was taking classes, I did not want to see a book.
Yeah. Too many words already. Too many books. Yeah.
I had textbooks. I had papers.
I was the same.
So normally reading a book would have been life-giving for me, but it wasn't. So I didn't read in my downtime, and I learned to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Sometimes being around people is energizing. Sometimes being around people is draining.
Hmm.
You have to have the freedom in yourself to add things onto the list, but then take them off the list of, this is going to be life-giving, this is going to be life-draining. What relationships are helping me right now? What relationships are not helping me right now? Spiritually, am I paying attention to that part of my being and the kind of practices that make a difference to feed that part of me? And like I said, there's a lot of overlap between them. So relational self-care can be emotional self-care.
Yes.
It could be physical self-care. You may go for a walk with a friend. And so two things are happening right there.
Yeah.
But it's also deeply personal to each person. It doesn't have to be that because something works for one person that it's going to work for another person. And I think that is really important for people to realize, that if you hear somebody doing something and they're like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
It may be amazing for them. It may not be amazing for you.
Oh yeah. I have all these friends that are runners. I don't know what about me has attracted me to these other people who run so much. And I'm not a runner. I loathe running. I try to make fun of runners whenever I can. No, that's rude. But I'm like, that is not life-giving to me. Like thinking about training to run 14 or 15 miles and, you know, all that time away from other things that I really enjoy. And I, you know, I have a bike. I work out. You know, well, I used to work out a lot more before the baby, but, you know,
it's a different kind of workout.
Exactly. But what I appreciate is two things that you said, but the main one is that they can change, right? Because you have me thinking here about like, there's some things that I like to do a couple years ago that were really life-giving. And the truth is they're not very life-giving right now. So I'm like, is it me? Like, am I turning into this, you know, more rigid person, but I think it's kind of refreshing that like when you say different seasons just call for different kinds of things, because, you know, I've kind of been looking back and being like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not as fun as I used to be or some of these other things. And I'm feeling bad about that. But when you say that, I'm like, you know what? There's other things that give me life right now. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, you know, as like, your families change as you know, bring more kids in, or even some things with work. I know a lot of people have like a busy season at work. And so maybe they're like the life of the party and they love mm-hmm. seeing people, but like if they're at the office, like 60 hours a week, probably the last thing they want to do on a Thursday night is like meet up with people. They want to mm-hmm. like just unwind with some Netflix. And so I think recognizing that change can help people like maybe be more open about what is it that's life-giving, and it's okay if it wasn't the last thing mm-hmm. from last year. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. And I think that there are things that, like you said, if I always liked them and now I don't, I start to wonder, is it me?
Yeah.
And there can also then, so we talked a little before about maybe it feels selfish. Now let's add guilt into the mix. Now some guilt, right?
Yes.
And wondering, is this okay? Am I okay?
Yeah.
And it's funny, if somebody else told us like what we were going through, we'd be like, that's perfectly fine. Like you're just not interested in that, right? You're not interested in that right now.
Yeah.
But when it's us, we're like, I just need to think about this and make sure that's okay. And it's good to be reflective, but also sometimes it takes us a while to give ourselves permission to need a little bit of a break from that.
Yeah. You know, and back to some of my running friends, you know, now that I think about it, sometimes they go into seasons and they try other things. And I'm like, you know, and I'm like, that's great. I'm never like, you need to run, you know, I mm-hmm. think it's awesome. But like, you're right. We don't always extend the same grace to ourselves in this mm-hmm. and other areas, right?
Right. I had somebody tell me once, so I tried doing self-care the other night and I was sitting on the couch and I just felt awful because I felt like I wasn't doing anything and I really wanted to go for a run, but I knew it was important to do self-care. So I just made myself stay on the couch. And I said, what makes you think that self-care is just sitting on the couch? Self-care could have been going for the run. Fast forward, I was talking to somebody else and they had the opposite experience, right? I went for a run because I knew I needed some self-care and all I wanted to do was just sit at home, but I didn't. I said, well, what made you think sitting at home wasn't self-care? So we get these ideas in our heads of, okay, this is acceptable. This isn't acceptable. And I think it also ties into something else that I've come to learn over the years, which is I think there's at a minimum three phases of self-care that people can find themselves in.
Okay. Tell me more.
So one I call the survival stage. Mm-hmm. One would be the maintaining stage and one would be the thriving stage. And if you are talking to somebody who's in survival mode, I like to think of it in terms of if you're at the ocean, you're completely underwater and you're just trying to get your next breath. Yeah. You don't want to hear about like all of the fun things you can do in the ocean and how exciting. You're just like, I need to breathe.
Yeah.
So self-care for me in those stages of life are those things that feel much more basic, like sleeping and eating. I don't want to hear about vacation when I haven't slept because the baby is keeping me up or because I have this big thing due for work, right? I don't have the bandwidth to hear that. I need to hear how am I going to sleep? So if you're in more of a survival mode, your self-care strategies are going to look different. When you're in that maintaining place, you're okay. So now your head's above water.
Yes.
Right. You maybe have a little bit of bandwidth to doggy paddle or something like that. So you can do some other kinds of things. You're starting to stretch some of your self-care wings, but you're still not doing these bigger mm-hmm. kinds of things. You're eating, you're sleeping, you're maybe going for a run, or you're maybe allowing yourself to watch a movie or read a book or connect with a friend or something like that. And then there's the thriving stage, which is the people that are water skiing. So
doing backflips.
They've moved out of survival and maintaining. And now they're like, I have bandwidth to really make the most of these and do these more special kinds of things. And from my experience, most of us are in the survival and the maintaining stages most of the time. And then the thriving are these smaller windows. But when we think of self-care, we tend to think of the thriving stage. And so we don't even give ourselves credit for the other things we're doing that are also still self-care.
This is so interesting. And I think it's so applicable. Like I'm thinking about probably stupid stuff I've said to my friends who are probably in the surviving stage. And I'm like, you just need a vacation, you know, and that's like probably unhelpful. Right. And also
it's probably true.
Oh yes. Yeah. That's a good point. It is probably true, but like, they're like, I need a babysitter for Friday. You know what I mean? That's what they need. They need just like some time away. They don't need like an extravagant thing, but I'm thinking about, you're so right. There's a disconnect between like what we perceive self-care to be and then like those different levels. And sometimes like you're making me think of all kinds of things. Like, it's like we join a gym because we want to work out and we beat ourselves up because we only get there one day a week. And what you're saying is like, that's actually great. If you're like surviving mm-hmm. or maintaining that you're starting somewhere. Like you don't mm-hmm. start out 5 days a week. At least most people don't. I feel like that's like destined to fail, right?
It's actually a counterintuitive. It's what we all tend to think we should do. But if you think of it from like a strength training perspective,
yeah.
our goal should be something much more small, manageable, realistic, so that we can build to that. Like New Year's resolutions, right? Everybody, gym membership is at an all-time high.
Oh, yes.
Everybody rejoins. Everybody gets all of the exercise things in place. And that first week you do the multiple and then the next week it drops off. And then by February, you maybe stick your head in the gym one day.
You like look up the class online and you're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in March, you're like, okay, I still have this membership, so I probably should get there in April. And then a few months go by and you're just like, what's this charge on my credit card?
Very accurate. Yes. Yes. I mean, the way that you said it, it just makes such sense. And you can think about a variety of seasons where if and maybe I'm like hard on myself, but it's like, if I'm not in thriving, I oftentimes just view it as a failure. And I mean, what I hear you saying is like, that's not always, well, probably most of the time, it's just not a fruitful way to look at the situation when you're thinking about how to add self-care in.
Yeah, I think we're quick to put ourselves in that failure category, mm-hmm. But what I found is most people really believe that self-care is important. And when they say, no, I can't do self-care right now, they're not saying, I don't think self-care is important. They're saying, I have all these other things that make it not possible for me to do this. So I find people tend to say yes to self-care, yes, but to self-care, and no to self-care. But it's never to the idea that it's important. It's more to being able to implement that thing in that moment. So for a lot of people, if we think about what's happened the last couple of years, with so many places closing or not allowing large groups of people to get together, let's say you were somebody that went to the gym on a semi-regular basis. Well, now you can't go to the gym. So in one respect, you aren't saying yes to that activity anymore. So the question is it yes, but like, this is my alternative to that? Or is it no, because I don't have the weight machines that they have there? Yeah. And so I'm saying no to this particular self-care activity because I just can't do it. And I don't have the means to like replicate it at my home. When you're thinking about families in particular who transformed their homes from homes to schools.
Yeah. Ugh.
And the spaces that they were occupying were now serving so many different kinds of functions. Maybe the space in the house that was the play area is now the school area. And so that means that maybe the kids don't want to go in there anymore. Or the family doesn't want to go in because now that's the school area.
Yeah.
And so how do we sort of rethink some of this physical space, physical layout, and what's a different kind of activity that we can do if we can't do it where we've always done it before, because now we need that space for school.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really good transition into how can we work more of this self-care into families? Like, how can some of us parents who, you know, let's say, and I love the yes, but, because that is where I would put myself. Yes, but these papers need graded. Yes, but the house is a mess. Yes, but I'm too tired. Mm-hmm. And so how can we teach our kids to do self-care well, or maybe even better, like cultivate a culture where self-care is prioritized in a family?
Mm-hmm. It really has a lot to do with how we think about what self-care is. I remember somebody telling me that she lit a candle and just kept it going for 5-10 minutes, and then she blew it out. But for her, there was something about that that felt very caring for herself. And when we're thinking about what it is that we can do and how we can help our children, how we can do that in our own lives as parents, it's not always going to be what's the big family outing, but what sometimes is that thing that is smaller, but still has some kind of a payoff for us. And so it may mean just stepping outside for fresh air for 5 minutes. It may mean opening a window or opening the blinds or reorienting a space so that it's not always the same kind of a space. When I think of families kind of doing things together, of course there are, you know, you could play some games, you can sit down and do an activity together, but also what are the kinds of things that as adults we can do that are just for ourselves that we could then also help our kids learn how to do just for themselves, right? So if there's something that they enjoy and we don't have time for the whole big thing, what's the small thing? There's a lot of like picking up and putting down, right? So we don't have time for a full game of Uno, right? But could we do a couple hands of it maybe and then put it down? Can we do something that it doesn't require us to actually stay engaged with this particular activity, but if we drop in and out of it, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like charades, for example, right? Yeah. There's a couple different things you do with that. And if you get through it, great. If you don't, that's okay.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
can, you know, you can come back to it. It also depends, I think, how old your kids are.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, what's going to work for them. And as parents in particular, kind of giving yourselves permission for what all of those little things are going to do. And so I hear you when it's like, I'm too tired for this. I can't do that. I don't have the bandwidth for it. I sometimes ask myself if I have 5 minutes for whatever this thing is, or 10 minutes, because I think we go to the extremes of, if I do this, it's going to be this bigger kind of thing. It's going to be a 1 hour commitment. It's going to be the whole afternoon or something like that.
Yeah.
So what's in between that? What's in between, I don't get it at all, or I just lost several hours. Maybe what's in between that is this small thing that isn't going to fill my cup as much as doing it for multiple hours would,
right?
But is going to fill my cup more than if I did nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. So do you have any examples of a family or a couple that you've worked with who maybe you've identified self-care? And I like the physical, mental, emotional, you know, the five buckets that you kind of talked about, where you've seen them come full circle.
You know, I think I've seen it happen in a lot of different couples and families, but it's not how anybody else would think, oh, that's what it looks like.
And
so I, you know, as the different examples kind of flash through my mind, I'm thinking somebody who's listening might say, well, like, that's not going to work for us. I'll give you a funny example. This is actually something I recommend people to do if they could get a big enough group of people together.
Okay.
Is when we were in person, we used to rotate around like big poster boards, and I would have them for 1 minute write in small groups of like three people or something, what's physical self-care ideas on this sheet? And then there's another group writing on the mental, another on the emotional, spiritual, relational. And then after like 90 seconds, I'd make them rotate. And so now the physical people go to the mentalist and they add to it. And in the space of about 5 to 10 minutes, that group of people creates this giant list of ideas that are super creative. And then I would compile them for them to have this list that they've all generated. And they could use that as like a resource to go back to. When I did it virtually, we just did it on a Google Doc. So you just had everybody scrolling up and down on the Google Doc.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
Yeah, but I remember one time there was somebody talking about how whitewater rafting was like physical self-care and how much that meant to them and like how helpful that was to their family system. And some of the other people that were there were like, whitewater rafting?
I would be like, one of those people.
Yeah, I could never. I was like, I'm like, more power to you. That's not me. but for them, that was so meaningful. And it was something that they had enough people in their lives that it made a difference for them to be able to do something around. And what I liked about it was not that I was going to go whitewater rafting afterwards, but I need to hear from people like that to get me outside of what my usual ideas are going to be for what physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and relational self-care are going to be. And sometimes I think we get kind of like stuck in our own ruts and routines of what's going to work. But, I had some couples who had these really creative ideas about date nights that some people would say that's not a date night.
Yeah. Hmm.
And it's like, well, that was maybe not be a date night, like for you or how you want it or whatever.
Yeah.
There were a couple of videos that I saw circulating at the height of the shutdown of kids creating mini restaurants for their parents at home.
Yeah.
Right. And it was super meaningful for the kids and super meaningful for the parents because they, of course, it wasn't the going out to dinner and somebody watching the kids kind of experience, but it was such a special family kind of bonding thing that I think they would have said like that was self-care for them in a different kind of a way to be able to share that with their children and with themselves. And some people like for the holidays, when they get so hectic and so crazy, self-care is I'm getting all throwaway plates, silverware, napkins. So there's nothing to clean when it's done. Some people it's we're getting pizza instead of the big holiday meal. And there's going to be different reactions to that, right? Some people
have, sure.
What about all the traditions? How could you do that? And so if that's not for you, that's totally okay. But those are the kinds of things that just get us thinking differently. Like maybe my family is not going to do a pizza for the holiday, but there are some, if you go to Sam's Club, there's some, or BJ's, there's some pretty nice disposable plate kind of situations.
Oh yes.
That'll look just as good as the ones that you eat off of every day. And when it's over, you'll probably be like, maybe we should save them.
This is great, Kristen, because I'm thinking about like, even, you know, when my husband and I, we usually get away at least one time a year. But like I could sit on the beach for 8 hours. I mean, and that would be amazing self-care. I mean, I could literally sleep in, go at 11 and come back at like 5 or 6 for dinner. But my husband, like he likes to do things. He's like, oh, let's look into the ATVs or like, do you want to take this excursion? And it's, maybe going down a different tangent here, but like, it's so important to know that about other people, right? Or like friends who, you know, maybe I'm overwhelming them because I'm asking too many things about plans and like, they just like want to chill. And I can think, especially like with your spouse, understanding how they self-care well and what maybe their like top 3 or 4 things are in certain seasons, like you can contribute to allowing them to do that versus like being on the opposite end and being like, let's go, 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 go. And the person just like wants to sit on the couch.
Yeah. Yeah. And the same thing is true of kids as like their personalities are developing and their awareness. They're not going to be able to say like, here's my self-care activities, but I know it's really well-meaning to make sure that there's like structure in place for kids as they're growing up and as they're coming into their own. But I have talked to different kids throughout the course of my practice who they're, like you said, kind of go, 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 go so much that they do it and it keeps them busy, certainly. But they would have loved to just not have that one activity or to not do this thing, or maybe they feel like they're not getting to spend as much time with their parents as they want to. And so then you sometimes can actually see that trickle over into, they seem like they're getting sick more often.
Oh yeah.
Well, maybe they're getting sick more often because when they're sick more often, there's a parent or an adult or a grandparent or aunt or uncle around that's just kind of spending some one-on-one time with them. And so it's not that they hate that instrument or that sport or whatever, or even hanging out with those different people. Maybe they're wanting a little bit more like parent time or family time or something like that. And they're not going to be able to recognize that.
No.
Right. And sometimes we don't even recognize it. They're not like, I want more family time, so I'm going to say I'm sick.
Yes.
It's just a leap that their head makes. Like when I'm sick, somebody's going to take care of me.
Yeah.
And it's not all thought out. It's just that's what happens. But I think you're right. Knowing what are some of the bigger self-care kinds of things for your spouse, for your children, that makes a huge difference in also being able to get the most kind of bang for your buck. Like if we only have so much time and we can only do like one thing, is there one thing that kind of touches on each of the areas that are important to us rather than this other kind of a thing that we could do? So maybe it's like an escape room. So it's an activity and we're doing something, but those escape rooms are not very big.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do a ton of walking, but we're all able to do it together.
Yeah.
And they have them that you can take home now. So, you know, some families can even bring them home or do them online. So there's a lot of creative options for it.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, I think your point about, you know, really trying to recognize this in your kid and as a parent, finding ways to make that happen. So our 6-year-old, like she'll color, she'll draw, if you take her out for like a donut, she'll talk to you the whole time. Whereas our toddler in the middle, who's 3, I mean, we took him to Sky Zone, you know, like the trampoline park, really for the first time. It wasn't his first time, but it was his first time in memory since it was shut down last year. I mean, you would have thought we took him to Disney World. I mean, he just ran. He ran, jumped, ran, jumped. You know, and my daughter loved it too, but she's just as happy doing something else. Whereas he is just like, he has such energy. And I've been saying to my husband, like, I don't want to squash the energy. Like, I want him to have all the energy, but like, I also like, can't, you know, I don't know, like I can't like build a gym in my backyard. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you're going to tear down the house, kid.
I can't maintain this breakneck speed.
Exactly. But it's like, I mean, and it was so great, you know? And so I think if we as parents, you know, to some of your points that you've said today, if we are a little more intentional and looking for that, and then even just like making notes, like I love what you've said about your class doing the different things, but like, even if we like had a note in our phone, like, okay, Molly really likes A, B, and C. And then like when we're brain dead at the end of the day, but we have something on the docket, we could be like, okay, what are these 3 things I've done with Cal this year? Oh yeah. Let's go back to Sky Zone. He loves that. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like you're not reinventing the wheel every time.
Mm-mm. No, especially with kids. I don't think they are going to get the fatigue that sometimes we get as adults. Like, it's still special for them.
It is.
When they do that. And I think there's a lot of pressure on parents to, I'll say, like, take the kids to Disney.
Yeah.
And the kids are happy with the local amusement park.
Sure.
And the kids are happy with the playground that's, you know, down the street. And that's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And also more manageable and more accessible.
Yep.
But I think there's a lot of pressure on parents that other people put on us and that we put on ourselves to do the kind of the bigger thing.
Yep.
And we don't always have the space to be able to do the bigger thing. And it seems like the playground is going to be a poor substitute for what it was that we were trying to get after. And so we don't do that at all. And so we end up with neither of the two instead of something that at least kind of makes a deposit.
It's so true. That's such a good example, because we continue to feel like we're failing because we're not doing these grand gestures, when at the end of the day, they're very satisfied going to the playground. They've been to 100 times because you're there and you're present and their buddies are there and they're running around. And that's what kids like to do, at least little kids, before they get all the electronics, right?
Yeah.
Kristen, this has been so awesome. Thank you for coming on the podcast today and sharing all this wisdom with parents. It's just, I know this is going to help a lot of parents. I mean, honestly, kind of what we're saying about the grand gestures, just feel like if you can see some of the ways that you can pour into your family, pour into your relationship, pour into yourself. And, you know, like you were saying, the 5 minutes, right? 5 minutes at a time. I feel like it pays dividends, right? The ripple effect is very strong and powerful, and you just got to start, right?
Yeah. And I think it's It's about giving yourself permission to start somewhere, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the gym.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to automatically go to, I'm going to be doing this 5 days a week. And first of all, your body is going to rebel against you if you were doing zero and now you're doing five days a week. So that's one thing. The other thing is, when you think about it in a family context, like if you're not used to being able to carve out this time with the kids and the kids aren't used to it, then they're also going to find it strange that all of a sudden now there's this huge amount of time available. They'll be a little bit less questioning of this 5 minutes here and there that slowly grows to 10. And it also give you, you know, you as a parent, the capacity to kind of recognize, this is what I can do and what I can keep offering. But thank you so much for inviting me to share and to talk about this. I love talking about self-care. It's really made a difference in my life. And the more that I do the small things, the more that I find I'm able to enjoy my life and enjoy the people in my life that mean the most to me.
Thanks for listening in today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Be sure to share with us on Instagram what you liked most about the episode by tagging me at Susanna.McMonagle. And lastly, if you want more information about the 5 to 8 shift, you can check out our website, the5to8shift.com. We'll see you guys next time.